Namaste. నిత్యంధరాధికామస్య
యోగినమైత్రస్య
పంచుర్జాయేవ పుంశలి నిత్యం దదాతి కామస్య చిత్రం తమనుమేరయ యోగినమైత్రస్య మైత్రస్య పంచుర్జాయేవ పుంశలి నిత్యం దదాతి కామస్య చిత్రం తమనుమేరయ యోగినమైత్రస్య పంచుర్జాయేవ పుంశలి
నిత్యం always the dadati gives kamasya of lust chidram facility become that anu follow those haraya enemies yogis kritamaitrasya having put faith in the mind patyo of the husband jaya eva who like the wife Pumshali, who is unchaste. Translation, unchaste woman is very easily carried away by paramours, and it sometimes happens that her husband is violently killed by her paramours. If the yogi gives his mind a chance and does not restrain it, his mind will give facility to enemies like lust, anger, and greed, and they will undoubtedly kill the yogi. Wherefore, this verse, the word Pumshali, refers to a woman who is very easily carried away by men. Such a woman is never to be trusted. Unfortunately, in the present age, women are never controlled. According to the direction of the Shastra, women are never to be given freedom. When a child, a woman must be strictly controlled by her father. When she is young, she must be controlled by her husband. When she is old, she must be controlled by her elderly sons. If she is given independence and allowed to mingle unrestrictedly with men, she will be spoiled. A spoiled woman, being manipulated by paramours, might even kill her husband. This example is given here because a yogi desiring to get free from material conditions must always keep his mind under control. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that in the morning our first business should be to beat the mind with shoes 100 times, and before going to bed, to beat the mind 100 times with a broomstick. In this way, one's mind can be kept under control. An uncontrolled mind and an unchaste wife are the same. An unchaste wife can kill her husband at any time. An uncontrolled mind, followed by lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion, can certainly kill the yogi. When the yogi is controlled by the mind, he falls down into the material condition. One must be very careful of the mind, just as the husband should be very careful of an unchaste wife. The mind is the root cause of lust, anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. Combined, these constitute bondage to the root of activity. What learned man would put faith in the mind? Wherefore, the mind is the original cause of material bondage. It is followed by many enemies such as anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. The best way to control the mind is to engage it always in Krishna consciousness. Since the followers of the mind bring about material bondage, we should be very careful not to trust the mind. Translation, unchaste woman is very easily carried away by paramours, and sometimes happens that her husband is violently killed by her paramours. If the yogi gives his mind a chance and does not restrain it, his mind will give facility to enemies like lust, anger, and greed, and they will doubtlessly kill the yogi. The mind is the root cause of lust, anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. Combined, these constitute bondage to the root of activity. What learned a man would put faith in the mind? So, here again is a continuation of this idea of the nature of the mind, which was considered to be restless and unsteady. Example is given here of a unchaste wife. So similar to the unchaste wife is the mind and if not kept under control, it can cause a lot of problems. So therefore, we will ask the question, why? What is wrong with the mind? So the next verse answers and says, so many things arise from the mind. We have lust, anger, illusion, greed, lamentation, fear, etc. And because of these things, we do actions, and by these actions we get karma, and we get bound up in the material world. So bondage is caused by actions in which we have a desire for results, and we do not follow the scriptural injunctions properly, and therefore we end up with suffering in the future. So the uncontrolled mind is considered the enemy because we do all sorts of activities which are sinful, consisting of lust, anger, greed, etc. And this creates bondage and suffering. Not only that, it degrades us into a lower position, and if we're not careful, we may become an animal or a plant. So this is considered to be very disastrous for the living entity. He degrades himself instead of elevating himself. So elevation means, first of all, elevation in the gunas, the highest guna, sattva. If we go in the opposite direction towards tamoguna, that is considered to be disastrous, lack of progress. So the animals, of course, are in the lower modes of nature. As a human being, we're supposed to progress to sattva, and from that position we're supposed to get out of the material world. And so if we don't control the mind, we'll end up going backwards. That is, we'll degrade ourselves down to tamaguna and then into animal species or plant species. Okay? So that is why it says in the Bhagavad Gita that one ends up in a very fearful position by not controlling the mind, and one degrades and one, therefore the mind is considered an enemy. On the other hand, the Bhagavad Gita also says the mind is a friend. So this means that if we use the mind in another way, that is to put control over it, we can get great benefit. Just as a friend gives benefit to an individual, so the mind also can be. So it's not necessarily an enemy. If it is under control, and then it becomes very useful for the individual. So we know in yoga, first of all, control is there, and then the mind is used for meditation. So it becomes useful, and through that one gets samadhi. In the process of bhakti, the senses and the mind are used in such a way that we do not create karma, but we destroy karma. And we end up in the spiritual world. So the mind is not necessarily the enemy, but has to be used in the proper way. So the previous example was given of the wild animal. The mind is like a wild animal, and you catch it, and then you think, it's tame now, and then you let it out, and it runs away. Out of control still. Unpredictable. So, again, the mind has to be very, very carefully controlled, otherwise it will go out of control, and one ends up in a disaster position again. So one always has to be careful of the mind. Nevertheless, it has great benefit. And it can help us progress also if used in a certain way. So we don't condemn the mind. It has a dual position. Compared to the senses, which arise from ahankara in the rajagun, mode of passion, and the material elements, which arise from ahankara and tamoguna, the mind actually arises from ahankara and sattvaguna. So in one sense it's superior. So the mind can be useful if we know the proper method. So that method we have to learn, and of course this involves control. Arjuna says to Krishna, very difficult to control the mind. And Krishna says, well, if you want to progress, you have to control the mind. It's not a question of, I can't do it. If you can't do it, then you end up degrading yourself in the material world. So if you want to progress, you have to control the mind. So yes, difficult, but not impossible. And so what does he say? Abhyasana dukkantaya, by rabhyasya kripate. So by practice, we have to make an attempt to control the mind. And by ragya, we have to use our intelligence to avoid certain things which we know are not beneficial for us. So our choices are there. Environment, etc., and where to go and whatever. So we have to avoid situations which will cause problems as much as we can. And we always have to have this control, practice of control of the mind. And by that practice and avoidance, and then we bring the mind under control. So that, of course, is a normal process we'll find in jnana and yoga. They emphasize going to a lonely place where nobody is around, being silent, minimizing the eating, minimizing the things you see, etc. So we restrict. This is the vairagya aspect. And then they practice controlling the mind. In jnana, they meditate on Brahman. I am not the body, I am Brahman. And in yoga, of course, they go through the pratyahara and dharana and jnana process. So they practice and they renounce the material world. In bhakti, the process is a little different because we have the process of yukta vairagya. Of course, we can say that the yogi and the jnani also yukta vairagya in one sense because they use the senses because they must, and the mind, because they must meditate on Brahman or meditate on Paramatma, so they have to use the mind and the senses to some degree. But there's also this idea of restricting everything. So, in bhakti, instead of restricting, the senses are engaged in the service of Krishna, the Supreme Lord. And the mind also is engaged in the Supreme Lord. What is the difference? The difference, of course, is that in jnana, one must concentrate on Brahman, which has no qualities and form. And in yoga, perhaps one will meditate on Parama, on the future of the Lord. In bhakti, we meditate on Bhagavan. What is the difference? The difference is that Bhagavan is full of wonderful qualities and wonderful pastimes. Paramatma's pastimes are only creation of the material world. That's about it. So the activities of Bhagavan are of more variety and more attractive. So therefore, we practice controlling the mind in bhakti, of course, by hearing and chanting and all those other processes as well, then remembering and meditation, etc. And the object of attraction is more wonderful. And of course, among all the different forms of Bhagavan, we have Krishna, who's the most attractive. So this makes that practice much easier. As I mentioned previously, we give up the lower taste if we have a higher taste. So by seeing Krishna, then we can develop that higher taste much more easily. So this is the process in bhakti. We practice using the mind and the senses by engaging in the service of Krishna. what this does is it destroys karma and the seed of karma, which is desire, etc. Desire, hatred, anger, etc. Which means all the negative aspects that arise in the mind, and ultimately ahunkara, which is even more subtle than the mind itself. All of these are destroyed by the process of bhakti. So, in this way, the mind is put under control. Not by simply controlling the mind and restricting it, but rather by engaging the mind and the senses in the service of the Lord. It is true that in the process of yoga or jnana, eventually we can also destroy or stop the mind and ultimately annihilate the ahankara, and then one gets liberation. That's also true. But the process is much more difficult. And we can read in the Bhagavatam, the 11th canto, how the yogi has to merge all the different elements in his body into the previous element until everything merges into ahankara, and then he merges ahankara into prakriti, under mahatattva, mahatattva into prakriti, and that's how he gets his liberation. A very difficult process. So the process of bhakti is much easier. We simply dedicate the mind and the senses to the very attractive object that is the Supreme Lord, the form of Krishna. And in this way, we accomplish whatever the yogi and jnani accomplish, but we actually get more because we develop a position of service with the Lord eternally. So in this way, we succeed. So the mind and the senses are positions of all the different thoughts, and desires, etc. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that lust is the cause of doing all these activities. It later transforms into lust. And then he says they are situated in the mind, in the senses, etc. Intelligence. These are the sitting places or the seats of lust, anger, greed, etc. So then one has to begin erasing all of these things somehow or other. And then ultimately we have to get rid of the mind itself. All this is very difficult because we are conditioned in the material world and attached to all these different things in the mind, whatever. How to get rid of the mind when we're so attached to it? The mind goes with the jiva life after life after life. The subtle body continues life after life with the jiva. So we're very attached to the subtle body and the mind. Very difficult to get rid of. So the best is we can control it and use it in one way, which will give beneficial results. So in this way, the mind becomes a friend. So the easiest way of making the mind a friend is to engage it in the process of serving the Supreme Lord. We can try the other processes of jnana, anastanga yoga, etc. That is vairagya, etc. But easier process is the process of bhakti. So this is the process recommended.
In the GAN
process, we utilize mind and intelligence. Obviously, the GANA means using intelligence. But ultimately, intelligence is material. So you cannot really realize Atma by the mind. It's impossible because mind is a material thing. So how is Atma revealed? By itself. Atma reveals itself. Self-realization means the self realizes itself. Nothing else can realize it. So it's compared to a lamp, which is svaprakasha, self-revealing. The light reveals itself. In the same way, Atma reveals itself. It is conscious of itself. Now what happens is the Atma is conscious of the body. Think I am the body. So ahankara is in the way. So we have a big illusion. Atma is functioning, but it's functioning in relation to the body, etc.
because of ahankara. Yeah? So when we remove mind and stop all the functions of mind, ahankara, etc., then atma is free to realize itself. But a difficult process. Yeah? It can be achieved through jnana and yoga, but a very, very difficult process. Because mind by nature is chanchala. It's always flickering and moving around and doing something. It's very difficult to stop it. But process of yoga is stop the functions. Chitta vritti nirodha. That's the first sutra in the yoga sutras. To stop the functions of chitta. All material consciousness, mind, intelligence. Stop everything. When that stops, then we got the revelation. Well, yes. That is the process in bhakti. We use the Supreme Lord and His mercy instead. Instead of trying to stop everything, we do that. Now the yogi also does that because he also meditates on Paramatma. And Bhagavad Gita is explained that by taking shelter of Paramatma, then he is able to realize the Atma by stopping everything. So, yes, the yogi does take shelter of Paramatma in order to realize Atma.
So it means that the subtle body of mind is in his ego.
By the choice of the jiva, they simply take over. That's all. It's not that the jiva is not there; it's there, and without the jiva, nothing else really functions. But they dominate.
Despite a favorable situation, devoid of material sense objects, Paramatma Maharaj fell down.
No, he did have sense objects. He had a deer.
The question is how the age of Kali, the devotees are surrounded by objects of gratification, control the mind.
Well, the idea is that the only thing we can do is engage ourselves in the service of the Lord.
In spite of engaging in devotional service for many years, my son devotees are not able to control their mind and fall out of the mind.
Yes. That is due to several reasons. Just as the yogi may fall, or the gyani may fall, or the bhakta may also fall. And Krishna also admits that he said, even the devotee is the most sinful activity, still my devotee, if he rectifies himself and continues the process. Now the reason for this situation is that the devotee may be in a very initial stage, or kanishta stage, in which there is what is called war with material energy. So the bhakti is not strong enough, and his desires for material things are more. So therefore, there's a constant conflict. If one reaches nishta, that does not take place. But if he's not at that stage, then it's this unstable state where sometimes maya wins, and sometimes bhakti wins. So it's a constant struggle.
Maharaj, it is said that the name, form and qualities of the Lord are in His holy name. The name, form and qualities of the Lord are it's there in the holy name.
Yeah.
So when we chant, we get these realizations. Prabhupada initially mentioned that at the initial stage, we should just hear the holy name. But the process of sadhana bhakti is to practice. So do we at a certain stage need to practice meditating on the pastimes of the Lord which we are getting from Bhagavatam to start developing the taste of for these pastimes?
Well, yeah, of course there is ultimately no rule, niyama, in one sense, that you have to do this or you have to do that. We do know that if we have no knowledge and we chant, because we're liable to chant Namabhas. Yeah? So we chant in ignorance, we don't know who Krishna is or whatever, then we're Namabhas. So therefore, we have the process of Shravana, which allows us to understand the position of the Lord, the nature of the Lord, the form of the Lord, the activities of the Lord, etc. Okay? So hearing Bhagavatam in the pastimes of the Lord is one of the important angas of bhakti. By this, we understand about Krishna. So this helps us realize Krishna. So we cannot separate the name Krishna from that. If we artificially try to do so, then that is more like impersonalism. We're thinking Krishna is different from his name and his pastimes. So the things should go together. we get the knowledge so we can appreciate Krishna more, so that when we chant we can realize him. Well, generally it is said that first we realize the name, then we realize the form, then the qualities, then the activities of the Lord, one after the other. So that, of course, that takes place directly in, of course, bhava, when one realizes the Lord himself. But to get to that stage, then we have to do the practice. So we chant the name of the Lord, we hear that name, and simultaneously we understand and appreciate what that name represents in his pastimes, etc. So that the name goes along with his, you know, qualities and pastimes, etc. We cannot separate them.
The tongue and the ears are material. When they chant and utter the names, the ears and material ears, it's not more important that the mind hears it, because the mind is more subtle.
Well, the nectar of devotion there says that the sum and substance of all rules and regulations is always remember the Lord and never forget him. So if you chant but your mind is thinking something else, then it's not really effective chanting also. So the idea is that you concentrate the mind on the Supreme Lord. So chanting means not only hearing, but also smarana, remembering the Lord.
The argument can be put that, okay, then let me only think of Krishna chanting in my mind.
You can do that. It's also there. So you can chant loudly, softly, or in the mind. It's all there. There's no rule. But of course, Nam Sankirtan, the loud chanting, is considered the Yuga Dharma. And therefore, Haridas Thakur chanted loudly, but he also chanted manasically also. He did both. Well, just discipline the mind, that's all. Constantly discipline it. Try to keep it from wandering.
How does creativity
arise? Creativity comes from internal inspiration, like the poets or artists. Well, a lot of that, of course, is the connection between the mind. It could be with the Atma also. In those two. Mind influenced by the Atma. Also.
But can you please tell us that?
Also. Yeah, mixture. So many things are there. Other spirits. Tesla said he got his inspiration from some spirits that talked to him, who knows?
Sam
Robert
said scientists used to be yogis and
things
like
Abraham
and
Newton. Yeah, doctors or whatever, maybe some great person previously also.
Well,
so
I guess like people get borrowed ideas because spiritual or mentally.
Well, that's inspiration, the same thing. There's many sources. It could be Paramatma, it could be previous lifetime, it could be spirits, it could be so many things.
I think that's